you guys doing? Don't ask me nothing stupid, all right? We're in it. We will end it.
Hello and welcome to another Wolves Wired podcast. This is the Media Day edition. Tim, who was on the jazz intro track this time around?
That was one Miles Davis.
He's a famous jazz guy, correct?
He was quite famous in his day, still is, off the Seven Steps to Heaven album, So Near So Far. You might know Herbie Hancock on piano as well.
And mixed into that, you heard KG at Media Day, which we're just going to dive into right now and discuss because here in Tim's apartment, we've just been looking at each other awkwardly, not talking about Media Day, so we can save all the good Media Day dialogue for this podcast, so don't ever say we didn't do anything for you. This is the Wolves Wired podcast, as I mentioned, part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network Podcast Center. Be sure to follow the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network on Twitter at HPB Network. He's Tim Fakeless, a loyal and faithful co-host. My name is Zachary Bennett, and Tim, first Media Day, second Media Day?
Third Media Day,
and what were the biggest adjustments you made from your last Media Day and today?
Well, compared to my first, I was a lost puppy the first time. I had just moved from Mankato, so I didn't know anybody outside of reading them.
So did you show up on time to your first
one? I showed up early my first time, a little too early. Kind of sat outside the media room. At first, I didn't know where to go. But, you know, as opposed to this one, the biggest difference, I guess, would be that you actually know people this time around. My first one, I sat next to Andy G of Punch Drunk Wolves. I think it was his first one as well. That's just kind of how we got to know each other at first. Not going to do too much name dropping today, but...
Well, we're going to do... We might do a lot.
That was the first Wolves writer that I got to know, and it was because of Media Day.
Well, yeah, you can definitely... say you were on time or earlier than I was, at least. I got there what I thought was on time. It was about 5 minutes early. And all the seats were pretty much taken. So that was interesting. I'm not used to there being a lot of people in the media room in covering the Lynx this summer. You tend to get used to being one of the only few in there. So
right.
It was sort of weird. I got in there, I looked around, and I'm like, well, everybody else is going to be tweeting stuff, so... I sort of took an observer approach. What approach did you take going into the day?
I tried to mix and match. I got some more basketball opinions out there. I also commented on, you know, the fun things, the writer things, Peck's tattoo game, people's hair, Wiggins.
So you're talking Ricky. About your Twitter coverage right now?
We're talking Twitter coverage. Cool. That was sort of the approach I took on Twitter. I kind of stood back and let the pros, the newspaper guys, John Krasinski of the Associated Press, sort of ask the questions. They're the pros on that. I guess I know my place.
Yeah, if there's a Wolves Media Big Three, based on what we saw today, we're going to go John Krasinski.
Yes.
Locally known as AP Sports Guy. We'll go Britt Robeson of MinPost.
Absolutely.
Longtime Sports Illustrated writer, I believe. And then we'll have to go... I think the chucker of the session would be Jerry Zagoda. Not that he didn't ask good questions, but he asked a frequent amount of questions.
He sure did.
Well, enough about the people who tell the stories. Let's get into the team, which is why I think people were listening. The Timberwolves, of course, had their media day today, which you're probably aware by now. They will start practice tomorrow. They will have media availability throughout the week. And next Monday, October 5th, they will host an open scrimmage. I believe that is free, and I believe you can get tickets at Timberwolves.com by entering a credit card and dealing with the new ticket system they have over there. That's somewhat controversial, I think, but that's a topic for a different podcast. I think the big elephant in the room that we'll get out right away is Flip Saunders' absence. He's away from the team. I think multiple people today had said they did not or have not spoken to him. He's been pretty isolated from the team in terms of communication and things like that. So I think what we discovered today, if it wasn't confirmed by now or we didn't know now, is that things are proceeding without Flip. And Milt Newton set the tone right away. It wasn't exactly a somber mood. He set the bar low in that right away he came out and said, you know, between the two narratives of competing for a playoff position and developing and getting better, almost continuing to rebuild, for lack of a better word. And he said, he flat out said, we're just going to try to get better. And, you know, I think they set the expectations low between he and Sam Mitchell. Now, some of the players might think differently or might have a different mindset. And
yep,
we can go into that. But let's start with Milt. I think he's a very well-spoken dude. The word in Washington was that he was ignored a lot and didn't get a lot of say in personnel. I know they were sort of in between regimes, but now he's the head boss, and he looks like he's a guy who is competent enough to do the job, from what I can tell. They addressed the Anthony Bennett situation. Obviously, he was introduced at today's media day in Toronto wearing Vince Carter's number 15.
I found that interesting.
The big takeaway I had with the Anthony Bennett thing and with what Milt said is, you know, this is something that both parties thought was best. I don't know if you want to invest that much time into determining who approached who with the initial decision, but it probably was a move that was best for both parties. But I think the Wolves are somewhat motivated to do it because it looks good upon them as a franchise. I think it's pretty well documented that this isn't the best place for free agents or the most attractive place for free agents to come. So when you can accommodate somebody in a situation like that so they can go and get another opportunity to exceed and, you know, have a chance at carving out a niche in the league, I think that looks good for the Wolves, don't you?
I think so. I thought it was interesting that Newton used the logjam at the four as the reason why they had to let him go. I'm fine with the move. I'm happy for him. He's back home. But it's not like there was a solidified four with the exception of Garnett's 20 minutes a game. You'd think that there would at least be competition for him had he stuck around on the roster. I don't think there's any guarantee, unless Bayolets has blown them away already, that those minutes are already allocated.
No,
especially with Peck's injury, because that means that maybe a guy like Gorgie that they'd want to play maybe a little bit at the four will have to play almost exclusively at the five for the time being.
I agree. I think there's a lot of uncertainty as far as the rotation and how the minutes at the four and the five will be distributed. I also think that Anthony Bennett needs to be spoon-fed isn't the right term, but somebody needs to invest priority in him and give him an actual spot on the team, whereas you know, competing and not really having the confidence to know that you've been a consistent contributor on a team and not really having a solidified spot. I think Toronto especially, they'll give him a bench role, right, do you think? And let him sort of run with it and see what he can do with it. And I think focusing on him, you know, getting his confidence up is the big key with Anthony Bennett. But sticking with current Timberwolves, Milt, I mean, he set the bar low. I mean,
yes.
There is last year, you can tell that last year the entire organization thought they could compete and go to the playoffs at the beginning of the year, and maybe some people bought into that. I'm sure other people didn't, but after the Rubio injury, the story has been told already. But Milt seems like a cool cat. I'm pretty confident with him in the front office. He doesn't seem like an incompetent imbecile.
Definitely not an imbecile. I liked him. When you say he set the bar low, basically what Milt said was, if they're going to set a priority between trying to win right now and trying to develop the young guys, the priority right now is to develop the young guys so eventually they can win on a consistent basis.
3 years down the road,
right?
Well, more or less.
Be perennial winners. And I don't have a problem with that.
No, not at all.
The goal shouldn't be to win right now, not with this roster makeup. They're still a few years away. Their best players are 19, 20. In Rubio's case, I guess 25 years old. But they're all young guys. And the mentors are there for a reason. It's because the young guys aren't totally ready to take over and handle it by themselves. Or that's the that's the thought process between the front office and the coaching staff. So I don't have a problem with what he said, but yeah, the bar is definitely low at this point.
Yeah, I think he almost squashed the question before it was even asked.
Right.
And he probably read that Jerry Zagota interview with Sam Mitchell, in which Sam Mitchell was pretty much forced to answer the same question. It was, are you going to win this year? Are you going to prioritize the development of the young players? It's like, you can't have both, we assume. The media jackals assume that teams can't have both. I learned a lot about Sam Mitchell today. After he was introduced, when they announced Flip would be away from the team, it was, you know, I said on this podcast that it almost was like he needed to be held back and saying, I got this, people, I got it. And today I got this sort of the same vibe. He didn't seem like a yeller, which a lot of the players really emphasize that much about him as far as differences between he and Flip. But a lot of the questions that Sam Mitchell was asked too was about coaching philosophy and how it's going to differ while he's at the helm compared to when Flip's at the helm. What did you think, or I guess from what you heard in the press conference, what do you think the differences are between Sam Mitchell and Flip? It can be...
Well, from what Sam said, there are going to be some similarities in the playbook, you know, with slight alterations, obviously. I think Sam said something along the lines of, no two coaches run the exact same play. So Sam played for Flip. He's technically still a coach under Flip, coached under him last year. So there will be some similarities in the playbook, but nothing exactly the same from last year. Mitchell's time in Toronto, apparently he was a very strict coach. Not necessarily a my way or the highway, Larry Brown type, but definitely strict. It seems to me, and you know, I've never sat in on a Wolves practice or anything, but Flip always seemed to have more of a laid back, but still, you know, you got to do what I tell you personality. So it's really hard for me to say without actually seeing practice, which I never will. I'm assuming that there will be some similarities, but Mitchell's going to be more strict, if nothing else, just based on what the players said throughout the day today.
When he was getting a lot of those, I think Sam Mitchell held back on, you know, he was getting a lot of questions regarding his philosophy and schematically, X's and O's wise, but I mean, it is just playing basketball. It's not like plays or go exactly the way you draw them up, or, you know, basketball is a more fluid game than we tend to forget that. I think there's a lot of recycled concepts throughout the league and
sure,
different, you know, pick and roll, especially in the last 2 minutes of game, teams are just running pick and rolls and trying to get the odd man out in certain situations. So it's, you know, I thought he was pretty, for Sam Mitchell, somebody who is called the media fickle on the record to the media, I thought he took it pretty easy today. And then KG came in, you know, a nuance that people may not, if they're viewing Media Day from their home or following it on Twitter, it's, you don't see the schedule in which players are supposed to appear in order, and they gave it to us at the beginning, and I don't think one player ended up going in the order that they were supposed to.
No, KG kind of set the tone by jumping from last to first.
He was
first player.
He was supposed to go last, and the joke was the veterans needed to get a nap, so they needed to go first. But it was KG, and you heard him at the beginning in the audio. He told us not to ask anything stupid. Really, same old KG. And then after that, Andre Miller or Tyus Jones?
It was Tyus Jones, and then I think the two vets followed Tyus.
And it's Tyus fit in pretty well with the vets, I thought. He's very well-spoken, confident individual.
I thought he did very well.
One of the questions posed to Milt, though, and I forgot who asked it, but somebody asked him a question about the D-League, and I know that you and I have had opposite opinions. We've been on opposite ends of that spectrum. We maybe have gravitated towards the other way since we last discussed the issue, but when Milt was asked about the D-League being an option for Tyus because Tyus is at the bottom of that depth chart, he didn't say, no, it's not going to happen. I don't think they will. I mean, who needs a D-League team when you have Mayo Clinic? That's been my stance on it for a while. It's why send Tyus Jones, who's from Apple Valley, now on the Timberwolves, somewhere else? Especially if he's not getting a lot of playing time, as Milt mentioned. It's like, are you going to do this for 16 to 20 minutes?
That's the thing.
You know, in the right situation. But now, with all the D-League teams having an affiliate, can there be a right situation? Or is there, you know, are teams biding for their best interests? And why would they say, okay, we'll develop this kid on your, you know, for you, pretty much?
Right. Well, that's the thing with the D-League. And you've actually kind of swayed me over the summer about the necessity of having your own D-League team. With Ty specifically, I'm okay with him getting sent down with, like you said, the guarantee that he's going to get actual big-minute game experience. If he's just going to play 15, 20 minutes, just keep him in Minnesota. But if he's going to play, you know, a lot down in the D-League, I'm fine with it, 30, 35 minutes. Then I see the value in it. Then he's actually getting real game experience instead of just practicing and then sitting on the bench. With that said, there's definitely an advantage to sitting on the bench when you've got Kevin Garnett, Andre Miller, Tayshaun Prince, an entire Wolves coaching staff. There's an advantage to being on the bench of the team that you hope to eventually get playing time for.
Exactly, and developing chemistry with teammates on that team, even if it's just in practice or different workouts and things like that. I would like to, like everybody, I think, see every NBA franchise have a D-League team eventually, but there's a strong push to do that, and I think sometimes that strong push, we need to temper what the D-League can really do with each team as it is constructed right now. And with the Wolves, I just don't see a very useful reason to have one and to go out of your way and make one. But I thought that was an interesting topic that, you know, when they posed that question about the D-League, they talked about money too, and money being a thing. Obviously, another basketball team can be another business and work like that, but with all the, well, we need to teach players our system and developing, it's, come on.
I like the idea of having your own D-League team if you also have hired your own coaching staff that run the exact same system, because as it stands right now, especially last year, the last few years, the Wolves have shared D-League teams, which means that they can't control the type of system that team runs. So like when Shabazz would go down there or...
That was it. That was the last time.
Yeah, or you go back, you know, even beyond that.
I don't think there's been another.
Bracey Wright. Do you remember Bracey Wright?
I do
not. The first year of the D-League, he was the second round pick. The year that the Wolves drafted Rashad McCants, he led the D-League in scoring.
Wow.
And
where is he now?
I do not know. My point is, you need to have your system set on that D-League team for it to be fully useful, right? I feel like if you're running somebody else's system, it's not going to give you the same result.
Yeah, we should probably do an entire D-League Wolf-centric podcast. Ultimately, I think the D-League will get to 30 teams like they desire. I just don't think there's a lot of benefits right now. People forget that, you know, everybody immediately goes to the Shabazz Muhammad assignment and how he improved after not getting much playing time under Rick Adelman. Well, let's not forget that Shabazz went down to play with the Iowa Energy, who at the time were a shared affiliate, and he went to go play in their midseason tournament. So it's not like Flip sent Shabazz down to go on a 3-game road trip with the team. It's like they had a tournament in Vegas, which
right.
is Shabazz's hometown. And so it was just a perfect situation, and it was only there for like a week. So how much benefit is it really?
And in addition, did you watch any of those games that Shabazz played in? It's totally different style. The scores were always in the 130s to 120s. I mean, the numbers are so inflated in the D-League that as well as Shabazz looked technically and as good as his numbers looked.
He's the best player on the court, clearly.
Yeah, I don't know how much it helped them because they played such a goofy style down there. It's all scoring.
Yeah, no defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to plug myself, but I do have some highlight videos on my YouTube channel.
Plug it, man.
That's when I was learning how to video edit for the first time. So I do have some Shabazz Muhammad D-League highlights in some terrible quality videos on my YouTube channel if you want to check that out. After Sam Mitchell, we went on to Tyus. Andre Miller was there, and he was everything I expected him to be, a very casual. It sounded like, is he from the South? It sounded like he had an accent of some sort.
I can't remember where he's from off the top of my head.
Well.
I enjoyed Andre, though. He gave off the vibe of, you know, I've done this a million times. I don't necessarily want to be here, but I know how to make it sound like I'm cool with being here.
He was a less flamboyant Mo Williams.
Yeah.
If you remember Mo Williams last year.
Mo was my favorite interview last year.
One of the differences in one of the nuances, I guess, that were different between this media day and the last one is everybody this year came out individually, whereas last year they were paired up. So some of them were individual, but a couple of them were paired up, and Mo Williams came in late to sit at the table with Gorgie Zhang, and Mo was like, I'm going to pass you the ball, you're going to pass it back, and it was very funny. But Andre Miller was a little more composed in that sense. Very cerebral in his answers. He didn't answer too quickly. He thought about it. He was a very composed guy. Everything I would have expected from him.
I think in addition to that, because you talked about the differences between this year's media day and last year's, this year they got to actually talk about the season ahead of them. Last year, if you remember, Kevin Love had just been traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers and Andrew Wiggins had just been traded to the Timberwolves. So that trade, and Kevin Martin even talked about it right as he walked in.
Kevin Love got traded? That was his joke.
That was great. And then this year he's like, I saw Kevin Love got signed, so we can actually talk about the Timberwolves. He said something along those lines.
Thank you. Nice seeing you guys. And I know K-Love signed, so no Kevin Love.
So it was actually about the Wolves and not about a guy that had just gotten traded from the Wolves. So that was a refreshing change.
MVP of Media Day, it would be Kevin Martin. I think he had three money quotes. Here is the first one.
Yeah, I want to give a special thanks to Flippin' Milk for making me feel young again.
Here is the second one.
The case could be made for you in the starting lineup and as a six man. You've done both in your career. Do you have a preference coming?
No, there's not a compelling case, no. I know where I'm at.
It'll be
amongst under shooting guards out there in the league. And
here is the third one.
How did you score 39 after you broke your wrist?
Luck. I was playing the Knicks, not joking.
And as you can see, all of those are quote of the day, media day worthy. So Kevin Martin is in a luxury. And after Andre Miller went, Tayshaun Prince, and Kevin Martin was a little later in the day. But unlike Andre Miller and Tayshaun Prince, it seems like Kevin Martin gets to escape scot-free on the mentorship role, even though it'll be his 11th season in the league, I believe. And maybe it's because he's actually going to start and play, and he expects to start and play. This is his response to when he was asked whether he would start or come off the bench. Tayshaun Prince, though.
Tayshaun was fun. I thought he was very insightful, and it seems like it's strange to listen to Tayshaun Prince talk as a 14-year veteran. And I'm going to depress some Wolves fans here for a second. He was the young guy on the last championship team the last time the Wolves made the playoffs.
Wow.
He was the young guy in the starting lineup. So it's strange to see him come to the Timberwolves 11 years later.
You act like Wolves fans don't wake up in the morning and aren't depressed.
Yeah, they're on the upswing, fellas. Don't worry.
What was compelling is, with Tayshaun Prince, I thought he went into very detailed, although very broad and not very vivid, detailed timeline of how he came to, you know, how the negotiations with him coming here were. And if you go back and you look at the initial statement released by Flip Saunders in him saying that he had been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, but he was going to continue with all of his duties. Well, that statement said that 8 weeks prior to that statement is when the diagnosis and the treatment began. And if you go back 8 weeks from when the statement was, it's before the draft.
Yep.
So it was before the draft, and then Andre Miller, Tayshaun Prince, those signings happened. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you could almost say, well, was there a disaster scenario being prepped for and bringing aboard these veterans? Because obviously if Flip had any inkling that he wouldn't be around, that's why you bring veterans aboard. But that is probably a topic we don't need to dive into. I just thought it was curious how he went out of his way to explain how that timeline and process worked. And I think that maybe those details are worth looking into and considering. My favorite part of Media Day, Namia Bjelica.
He was fun. He
delightful.
He seems extremely excited to finally be in the NBA. Fun fact, I was actually at his press conference
when
he was drafted. He was sitting next to Johnny Flynn. Clearly wanted to play in the NBA. He was much younger, but he looked much younger at that point. He looked like a kid. He seems ready now, and he said he's he's a rookie, but he's not really a rookie. He's 27. He just won EuroLeague MVP. We've talked about it. If you saw him in EuroBasket over the summer,
yeah,
he looks great. He looks like a veteran.
We've talked about him at nauseam. What is funny is you saw Wiggins last year, and there's no way that Bielitsa is as composed as Wiggins is, especially with today. You know, very innocent, kind-hearted guy, I thought, today with his excitement. I know he, within the last couple of years, was recently married, and he has a kid, so he's growing up as an adult, but he's our age. He's 26 or 27,
mm-hmm.
something along those lines. So
27, I think.
He's embarking on a different period of his life and really wants to do well. He said he didn't. He's not preparing any differently than he would playing in Europe compared to how he's preparing for the NBA. Peck says he needs to lift weights. I think there's some truth to that. I think he should get a little bigger. It's almost to pick your poison, though, because if you're not going to be super strong, you want to give up some strength to be quicker, in my opinion. But he's sort of in that middle ground where he could use to be, not only he could gain a few pounds, but he could also be a little quicker, too. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops in those regards and what positions he plays and defend.
Peck probably thinks everyone needs to lift weights, though.
Peck needs to shed some pounds. Granted, he hasn't been able to work out or do anything because he's been on crutches and in a boot, but he looks a little large, larger than usual.
Peck made me sad today. I mean, I love Peck. He's a good dude. He's had a good career in Minnesota, you know, when healthy. But today he seemed kind of down on just everything surrounding his health. There was a moment when they were asked if this is kind of his last chance, and
to his credit, he was very frank about the entire situation.
He
understands
absolutely.
That this could be his last chance in the NBA, if not professional basketball. Or, you know, we want to be concerned about his livelihood as a person to be functioning on this planet. And the pain that it sounds, he could not recall the last time he played without pain.
That's terrible.
And that struck me as there's a whole trail in the woods that we could get lost in when you look back to see. And we retroactively look back and hear the comments that Flip said last year and trying to contain his minutes and ends up playing 40 minutes a night sometimes and seems like mishandling and misusing. But at the same time, he's a competitor and he wants to compete, and I'm sure he wanted to be out there.
Well, yeah, and if you look at the way he played the last few years, I mean, was he hurt when the Peck Comes To campaign was going on to try to get him to go with Kevin Love to the All-Star
yes.
game 2 years ago? So he was hurt then, but he was still banging down low. He didn't look hurt.
Yeah, a hurt Peck is better than no Peck.
Right. So he fights through pain better than just about anybody. I mean, it showed more last year because he was really struggling to score inside. But if he's truly been hurt for, you know, a few years, then he's been covering it up pretty well the last few years, and he almost made an All-Star team.
He put a timeline on his return, although you have to sort of take that. For
yeah.
what it is.
It was a guess.
At face value. What was that guess? Do you remember?
7 to 8 weeks, I believe.
Okay.
A few weeks until he starts running again. So I think he said that his goal is to make it back onto the playing floor a month into the regular season.
Which is lofty. It's a lofty goal.
Yeah.
Considering the shape that we saw him in and just from the defeated morale that he displayed. But at the same time, he's getting paid a lot of money and he's coming here and, you know, going to work. I think he's very aware of his situation.
Right.
And you don't have to worry about him being an immature off the court issue. I don't think he's a guy who's here to work. He brings his lunchbox and a knapsack or whatever those cartoons used to bring in, the Popeye cartoons. I don't know.
To his credit, I mean, he's making a lot of money, and that's going to be a piece of criticism. And it has been in the past, his contract, but to his credit, he is trying to earn that money. He's trying to work back as quickly as he can. When you're as perpetually hurt as he is, it's hard to fully earn it, but he's trying.
And let's set it straight, is that was the market value for centers at the time. Granted, he did hold out. You needed to try to keep Love. I think if you go back, you want to criticize him for that move, you can, but I think at the time it was the right thing to do, or there was a lot of people who thought that.
Yeah, look at his numbers at that point. I mean,
best second round pick in Wolves history. Maybe.
Probably.
Hummel didn't make the team, so he's out of the running for now.
Who's number two, Craig Smith or Robbie Hummel?
I don't know. You are more well-versed in the history of the Wolves than I am. I got a little Phoenix Suns experience
under me. The
Cookie
Monster.
I think shortest interview today, Adrian Payne. Kind of awkward. Yeah, not many.
That was. I hope he does well, and I think there's still a chance that he'll do well, but at this point, he's only spent half a season here. Kevin Garnett's going to start. Bayleets is the new incoming, kind of exciting guy at power forward. There's hope for Payne, I think, but at this point, I mean, what can you really ask him?
Play when Kevin Garnett and Nami Bjelica are either not playing or struggling.
Right.
And, you know, if worst case scenario, you got to throw Payne out there. If he's not, you know, if the game isn't close or late or in a clutch situation, I mean, at least you have Adrian Payne to fill in the gaps, and it's not Justin Hamilton or some of the 10-day contracts that they brought in last year, them being the Wolves, that is. Radulica, as much as I
Onowaku.
Am a fan. And then don't forget about the legend, Jeff Adrian. Just Wolves legend.
I miss that dude.
And then Shabazz Muhammad today. I think he, if you were playing Media Day Bingo online at home, I think Shabazz Muhammad could have earned you about 6 or 7 squares with all the
best shape of my
comments.
Life talk.
Best shape of his life. He's working on his right hook. He says it's as good as his left hook. I don't buy it. You can't rule it out. He's been working. He, as well as Tayshaun Prince, wore a shirt that says "Been Dreaming" on it. It was apparently NBA Players Association shirt that was sported around the league at various media days. But Shabazz Muhammad is poised for a big season, it sounds like.
One thing that I found interesting about what he was saying, Kevin Martin, this was later on, Kevin Martin was, as you mentioned, certain that he's going to be starting this year.
When Kevin Martin said that, if I was not on the Wolves beat, per se, over the last year, I don't know what he means.
Right, right. What was interesting to me was how earlier on Shabazz was hyping up the Shabazz Muhammad-Andrew Wiggins duo at the 2 and the 3. The mismatches, the fact that they're both good at playing in the post, the fact that they're both, you know, at the very least confident outside shooters. They're both young, they're both athletic. Martin,
in theory, they're a very tough guard.
Right.
Both of them.
They're very tough to guard. One of them will be playing the two, and they're both bigger, stronger, and longer than most shooting guards.
Unless you're the Grizzlies with Matt Barnes and Tony Allen.
That team's going to be
tough
to score on.
Sorry, but continue.
Right. So Martin is, you know, you don't expect Martin to be part of the Wolves' long-term plans, but currently, as it stands, Martin expects to start. I also expect him to start. As much as I like the idea of Martin coming off the bench, I almost equally like the idea of Shabazz with his energy coming off the bench. So I don't really have an issue with either of them starting.
If I'm making the decisions, which I am not, nor do I have any semblance of influence on these decisions.
No.
I don't think the coaching staff listens to this podcast. I would like to see Shabazz show more defensively before he obtains a starter's role.
To be fair, he would be starting over Kevin Martin, who defensively
has a bad reputation,
his faults,
but tries hard.
He does try.
I thought he wasn't as bad as people made him out to be last year. And when you're a threat to score 30 every night,
I thought he was that bad.
I mean, Kevin Martin, for you youngsters out there who are potentially listening to this with basketball careers, unlike Tim and I, Kevin Martin is a perfect example of if you can learn how to score 20 points a game in the National Basketball Association, you can have a job for a long time.
Yep.
Tayshaun Prince, too.
Especially if you can shoot for three. I mean, if you can learn how to score 20 points a game cutting the hoop, that'll last, you know, 8-9 years. If you can get a three-point shot.
And like, get to the foul line.
And get to the foul line, you're gonna last a while.
No Lorenzo Brown today.
I found that interesting.
That was kind of weird.
He's got a guaranteed contract. I mean,
nobody even asked. We don't. What was?
Are they expecting? The first episode we did, I said that Brown was gone. I still believe that. I still find it interesting that he wasn't at Media Day as a guaranteed contract, and I would hope that he'd at least have a chance to make his case.
Because another guy with a guaranteed contract, Damian Rudez. Now, there's been some back and forth and retracting and apologizing and correcting between us, but we need to nail down how to say this guy's name.
Okay, so David Naylor was on the show. It was our second show. He pointed out on Basketball Reference, it's listed that the correct way to pronounce it is Damo Radish, I believe.
And that's what we vowed to call him, because it is his correct name ever since that day. But today...
Recently, we received a training camp roster from Timberwolves PR via email with some tough-to-pronounce names and the way to pronounce them at the bottom. On there, it says Damian Rudez.
What are we going to call him?
Got to go with what PR wants, right?
Damian Rudez?
I think so.
Damian Rudez spoke today in phenomenally well-spoken English.
His English is better than most Americans.
He is a very mature, collected, aware dude, I thought.
Yes.
Somebody who reminded me of a teacher, almost.
He came in and asked us all how we were doing. It was a very polite man.
I'm sure if it felt like anybody knew they might not be on this team, the attitude that he presented, he might get that same feeling.
Definitely.
Do you foresee, if you think Lorenzo Brown's gone, doesn't that clear up a roster spot for Rudez?
I think so. I mean, from all the threes and the fours that the Wolves have, very few, maybe even none of them, are marksmen from 3-point. I mean, you got guys that can hit threes. I think it's been established that Towns can hit threes. Bielitsa can hit threes. But none of them are known for shooting threes. Rudez, he said it himself during media day today. He shot over 50% from three after New Year's. He wasn't good in Eurobasket.
Yeah, we didn't ask him about that. That's really dropping the ball. But at the same time, you didn't want him to jump from the table and wring our neck.
He was so nice. I mean, you don't want to bring him down.
No. And I can't write an article that says...
Right, exactly. Well, I think the more comparable comparison, while Eurobasket was more recent, it's better to look at what he did in the NBA versus international player.
100% agree. I wrote a column on Hardwood Paroxysm that said Eurobasket, or rather, FIBA success is not NBA success, so therefore, I think that's transitive property. FIBA failure is not necessarily NBA failure.
Right. Maybe. So you can't necessarily get...
You can't rule out that he could be a useful player.
Don't go super crazy about the way Bielitsa dominated Eurobasket. You should still be excited, for the record.
Absolutely.
But
I've
also
gone all in. I've said this before.
You have. But also don't count out Rudez as a possible contributor. He can shoot. There's no doubt.
No, with Bielitsa, I don't think he's ever going to post up. I just don't think that's his game. High pick and rolls. I was going through some articles and some research about him, and Jonathan Starks, or Tarks, or how do you pronounce that name?
From Real GM?
Real GM, yeah.
T-J-A-R-K-S. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce it.
I think it's Starks.
He's a good writer, though.
Yeah, Jonathan Starks, he wrote a really good column in Real GM in 2013 about the future of the Serbian national team, and there was an in-text citation in there that went to an academic study that showed that area, that small Serbian area, the former Yugoslavia, where Rudez, Goran Dragic, I can never pronounce his name right.
Dragic,
whatever. Pekovic and Bielica, among others, I'm sure, are all sort of from.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder if that country was still one big country, how good that team would be. But back to my initial point, that area of the world is where the tallest humans spawn from. And I know the Wolves just happen to have an international scouting director who lives over there.
That's handy.
That's how they keep pulling out these tall, long talents, I guess. Like we said, training camp is this week, so players are going to get at it starting tomorrow, throughout the rest of the week until Monday when the open scrimmage is, and then preseason begins. I don't know. It ends on October 23rd, so sometime between now and then. Any overlapping themes that we missed or players we didn't talk about? Ricky Rubio.
Rubio was fun. On the Bay Elitsa note, as he was exiting, Rubio gave him a nice little round of applause. We didn't even know he was standing back there. At least I didn't until the applause started and we all turned around. There was Ricky. He was in a good mood. He seems to be... I'm sure he's on board with the coaching staff in the front office, but he didn't seem all that big on the idea that they're not trying to win right now. If you look back at the Wolves the last 2 years when he's been healthy, the Wolves have been good, or at least competitive. So I think his hope is that the Wolves will still be good. He still wants to make the playoffs. I don't think anyone really expects them to, but I like his attitude. I like that he was in such a good mood, and he seems to be big on Carl. He seems to be big on Wiggins. I think he likes the situation right now more so than maybe even the front office.
Yeah, there was both Ricky and Carl Anthony Towns talked about playing pickup ball recently.
Chemistry they had.
And they had some chemistry. But although I think if you and I played pickup ball with Ricky Rubio, we would have some chemistry. I mean,
right.
Who doesn't Ricky Rubio have chemistry with? Bielitsa also said it'll be good to have Ricky Rubio on his team rather than competing against him, which was a nice little nugget that I enjoyed from today's presser. But yeah, I think as we touched on it before we discussed everybody else, I think Milt set the tone and he set the bar low. But when you talk about Ricky is almost the most ambitious and he has the highest aspirations for this team just from the way he sounds and the way he talks and what he said. Ricky also happens to be the one guy that can't afford to be injured if the Wolves are going to make a playoff push. So it's good that he has that mindset.
It's true. And Garnett and Andre Miller both touched on chemistry being the most important part of building a young team. And Ricky Rubio, I still think Ricky Rubio, when healthy currently, is the team's best player, the most important player at the very least.
You're Rubiolo?
Yes.
It's okay.
I think, for the record, Towns and Wiggins have all the chance in the world to become better eventually. Currently, I think Rubio is the most important player, and as the team's point guard facilitator, if he's able to make chemistry that easy just by the way he plays, I think it bodes well for the Wolves.
Without question, the most important player on the roster.
Right.
The Wolves are one injury away, if it is Ricky Rubio, from potentially losing a lot of games.
I mean, going back to even his rookie year, Kevin Love got hurt, but the Wolves stayed competitive until Rubio got hurt. I mean, that always seems to be the case. Like you said, health is huge. As long as Ricky can stay healthy, if history is any evidence, the Wolves should stay competitive, at least to a certain degree. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs. They should stay competitive.
It's funny because nobody wants to say that the Wolves are going to make the playoffs, but nobody wants to definitively rule it out.
Well, with a team like this, I mean, they have the Rookie of the Year. They have Martin, who can score 20 points a game. And then they have the first overall pick.
The last two of them.
Right. One of whom was Rookie of the Year. They have not a great bench, but a potentially decent bench.
Well, they go 14, 15 deep.
Yeah, you got Shabazz. If Bay Elites is solid, there are some questions about Miller's ability to play point guard, but he's not going to play a ton, assuming Rubio's healthy. There's hope. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but if you were to tell me that they were going to surprise some people, maybe win a few more games than people are predicting, I also wouldn't be shocked.
And that was one of the questions posed to Ricky, is do you think this team could surprise people? And I think he just flat out said yes. One player we did miss, Gorgui Dieng, very comparable interview, I guess, to Adrian Payne's. Not a lot of questions posed to him. You can tell that Gorgui is a bright dude. I mean, he speaks four or five languages and
yeah.
Very innocent.
Absolutely.
It was, you could almost see the glow in his face talking about his time with Dikembe and how...
Hakeem,
I'm sorry. Participating in the NBA Africa event. I don't know if you saw that, but it was pretty cool to see those elder statesmen on the floor with the younger guys, if only for a couple minutes. But Gorgui is proud of his heritage, not only his country, but his continent, for the entire continent of Africa. So it was cool to see the glow in his face talking about how excited that made him.
And he's so good in international play. His numbers are nuts.
Well, he's the team's best player. He took three. He's taken threes and
He was driving to the hoop like from the perimeter and dunking on people. And he was. If you look back, there's a if you YouTube it, there's a big list of highlights of him shooting threes, driving to the hoop, taking people off the dribble, all from this AfroBasket tournament this summer.
I was going to say, AfroBasket's the key word to search there on the YouTube. I bet you could just search AfroBasket. And
it's mostly Gorgie.
Gorgie would show up. The one thing I think we should discuss, too, was last year we didn't get a lot of clarity on what Flip Saunders' criteria was for who and who cannot shoot three-pointers. We got a little more clarity today, and it actually is logical with Sam Mitchell saying you need to have this many repetitions in practice. You need to make this many repetitions. So you need to get this. You need to do the work in order to be able to shoot the shot on the court. What was your takeaway there?
Well, first of all, I thought it was kind of hilarious because there was a slew of, six questions in a row about three-point shots, and Mitchell was getting frustrated.
The three-point discussion did happen in there. I was sitting like, oh, man. This is what we argue about on the internet all the time, and now it's happening in the media room.
My only complaint is as it pertains to two-point shots versus, or long two-point shots in particular versus three-point shots, why is the flow of the offense resulting in more of these long twos rather than just taking a couple steps back? I understand that, and Mitchell said it, that you can't necessarily draw up a play that sets up a three-point shot, and they don't have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, these marksmen, which is fair.
Yeah,
but if you're taking 18-foot shots, 19, 20-foot shots, and those plays are being set up, I I'm not a coach, so maybe this is part of it. I don't understand why it can't be a three-point shot. Why it can't just be a couple steps back?
The extent in which that three-point discussion went to today,
it was intense.
Maybe after the dialogue on this podcast, maybe we'll just let that part run, let the audio part run.
It was good discussion.
It was definitely an argument that you would read in the Canis Hoopus comment section. Going as far as, like you said, Sam Mitchell pretty much saying, hey, we're not the fucking Warriors.
Right.
We don't have the guys to do this. So another thing to look forward, though. I mean, the question that I should have asked that I didn't was Sam Mitchell, Coach Mitchell. If there's a player who is getting enough repetitions and shots in practice from behind the three-point line, but he's hovering just below the accuracy mark that you would like to see him at, with adrenaline and all those other unquantifiable factors in a game scenario, you'd like to see the guy, I don't even care who it is, the guy who's doing the work to try to improve in that certain area, even if he's hovering a little below what the threshold is set at, still like to see him get the approval to shoot threes in games. But with Sam Mitchell, I don't think, or at least I hope, it's not going to be a talker throughout the season like it was last season. Last season was compounded by the fact that the Wolves were so injured and just so bad that all of these discussions surfaced about what you're supposed to do and the way you're supposed to play. And I think basketball is a simpler game than people make it out to be. It's not like people are playing NBA 2K at an arcade.
Right. And this is a question that I brought up over the offseason that I still wonder to a certain extent. If Andrew Wiggins had been given the green light to take as many threes as he wanted last season, would this even be a discussion? Like, I'm looking at some of the stats of the Wolves this year. Post All-Star break, LaVine shot 3.5 threes a game. Rubio shot 2.5 threes a game. Martin shot 5 threes a game over the season. So, I mean, he's giving guys, including Rubio, the green light to shoot some threes. If Wiggins had been given that same green light, is this even a topic?
I don't think so, no. But I don't think he should have been given the green light because, and I wrote this at a very, it was a, I wrote this at Canis Hoopus, Tim. I proclaimed that Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine were learning or developing and even further improving under Flip's tutelage. And when you look at the areas in which they were scoring from, if you are to compartmentalize analytic-friendly play with strictly getting shots at the rim and strictly getting shots at the three-point line. Both of those players did that. It was less settling for elbow jumpers in Wiggins' case, rather than, you know, having 15-footers spread all over his heat map like he did pre-All-Star break. During the second half of the season, it was all rim or behind the three-point line, although he didn't get many attempts from back there. But I actually like what they did with Wiggins' development last season and trying to get him to experience the toughness of the league and putting him into post-up situations and having him earn his way to the foul line and earn his way to the rim. He's going to get a lot more calls this year, I think, just because of that, what he established last year, the type of player he can be in those situations. I think officials will honor that aggressiveness with more foul calls this year.
I liked the way that they handled him as well. I liked how they, because early on, if you remember, Wiggins had a problem with being passive. It was the issue that people were concerned about coming into the draft out of Kansas before the Wolves even had the ability to coach Wiggins when he was the Cavs draft pick. But Flip basically told him, if you want big minutes, you have to go inside and get shots at the rim. You have to draw fouls, and he did that. And that's not to say that eventually they're going to work his game back outside, give him the chance to take threes. But had they never given him the direction to try to be aggressive inside, who knows what his game looks like right now.
Yeah, giving him the okay to shoot three-pointers is essentially enabling him to be a passive player. And
possibly,
if you're taking three-pointers because you're too afraid to be physical amongst the trees and amongst the bigs, or you don't want to get to the line, or by the end of the season you're so exhausted that you just don't want to do it anymore, it's not really pushing yourself, I don't think. And that's one of the keys with Wiggins. That's really all I have for talkers. What about you? Hate to put you on the spot.
No, I think we covered it pretty well. I think the overarching theme was coaches and the front office want to develop young guys. I think the players have a general idea of what the season's going to look like, but they all seem pretty excited about what it's eventually going to look like. They want to win right now, but I think for the most part, it seemed like they're pretty aware of what their chances are of winning right away.
If you're a long time professional basketball player, I'm sure you've been through some tumultuous situations through management and coaching drama and changes and things that different organizations and businesses in general go through. If you're a guy like Kevin Martin or Tayshaun Prince, you're looking at the Mayo Clinic and you're looking at the Wolves and you got all these youngsters, and not that these players necessarily don't want to perform to the best of their ability, but make a little money, come play basketball for the Timberwolves with, and granted, Flip's got the cancer. It seems like a pretty chill environment to be a professional athlete. There's not a lot going on controversy-wise like there is in other places.
Sure.
Well, that'll do it today for the Wolves Wired podcast. We sort of jumped around from place to place, but this was all organic dialogue that was not shared between Tim and I and planned. And
it was just us talking.
Yes, thank you for saving me.
I got you.
I don't know why I couldn't say something as simple as "it's just us talking," but I stutter sometimes. And that's the way it goes. So, anything else you'd like to say? I know you're going to do something about this on the Sporting News.
I'm doing something for Sporting News and probably another place. I won't announce that yet, though.
Cool. Well, that's a nice teaser to end on. For Tim Fakeless, you can follow Tim on Twitter at TimFakLis. My name is Zachary Bennett. This has been the Wolves Wired podcast. So long.